case for argument today is 21-2211, Syncor v. Vicor. Mr. Horowitz, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. I'd like to focus on three points this morning. First, one pair of rejections in this case is barred by issue preclusion based on a finding in a prior re-exam. Second, the other pair of rejections fails to reckon with the fact that one of the references in the asserted combination points away from using the other. And third, across all four rejections, there's an unexplained inconsistency in the Board's treatment of secondary considerations. Let me start with preclusion. Rejections 3 and 4 should be reversed because Vicor is precluded from relitigating the question whether a skilled artisan would make what Vicor called a simple substitution of Steigerwald's synchronous rectifiers in place of JP446's diode rectifiers.
Can you explain this to me? So tell me why the following is an incorrect or legally immaterial understanding. In the earlier 702 Vicor proceeding, the asserted combination was borrowed two things from Steigerwald to combine with the JPP reference, the second being something about the rate of some rate. In this one, the asserted combination is not that, so that the issue decided against Vicor in the earlier proceeding was only that that combination would not have been made because of certain inconsistencies between the Japanese patent's function and the Steigerwald, but that's not necessary for Vicor to prevail here.
So it is true, Your Honor, that in the prior case, Vicor used Steigerwald for two different things. That doesn't answer the question whether it's the same issue. The reason why it is the same issue, notwithstanding the differences in claims, and by the way, there were differences in claims in Syncor 5 as well, is because that the issue decided was that a person of skill wouldn't combine the systems because there was something incompatible about the systems, just as in Syncor 5. So in Syncor 5, across three patents, there were decisions that you wouldn't combine, same issue actually, synchronous rectifiers from one system into diode rectifiers for another. And this court applied preclusion saying there was a prior finding that the systems had an incompatibility with respect to switching frequencies.
Why is the combination required for this case a combination of what you call the systems as opposed to a particular teaching from Steigerwald?
So let me make two points. One is general, and then I'll just take issue with the specific fact. So the general point is what the board found at 17734, I believe, is that the two systems, JP446 and Steigerwald, have different modes of operation that depend on different waveform types, such that you wouldn't make a simple substitution.
Waveforms, that was what I was looking for.
Well, there's two different types of waveforms, and let me dig into that too. So our first line argument is that the finding is about the systems and their incompatibility, just as in Syncor 5. If you think you need to parse the question, did they specifically find that you wouldn't bring in the synchronous rectifiers because of the current waveform, which is the dispute about the synchronous rectifiers, as opposed to the voltage waveform, which is the dispute about short transitions, which is what you were looking for earlier. We know they're talking about at least about the synchronous rectifiers and at least about the current waveform for a couple of reasons. One, they use the term simple substitution. We have the cites in our brief, but if you look, the only time Vicor makes an argument about simple substitution is in connection with the synchronous waveforms argument. So the board is taking that directly on and rejecting it. That's one point. If you look above on the same page, and I'll pull it out, in volume 3 of the joint appendix, like I said, I think it's 17734, but let me pull it up. If you look at the decision, and this is critical, the key paragraph is the second on the page where I'm looking at the distinct waveform types. But if you go right above that to understand what exactly, and again, 17734, what exactly is the board rejecting at this moment? Saying requester, that's Vicor, urges that the patent owner has mischaracterized the rejection as incorporating the waveforms of Steigerwald 539 into JP446. And then it cites respondent's brief at 20. I want to go to that brief in a moment, but before I do that, What the board is taking on is Vicor's argument that, look, you don't have to take waveforms from one system into another. You just have to take out a component, namely the synchronous rectifiers. With respect to that other issue, Judge Toronto, the short transitions, Vicor's argument was that actually you do have to take the waveform. That's the whole point. The short transitions is describing the shape of the voltage waveform, that it has short transitions rather than the sinusoidal shape. So it's saying, Vicor's saying, no, you don't have to take over the waveforms. What they're talking about is when you bring over the component, the synchronous rectifier, you don't have to bring over the current waveform. And in case there's any doubt on that, there's the site, Respondent's Brief, page 20. That's 19368 of the Joint Appendix. So if you turn over to 19368, same volume, thankfully. Let me get there. Here it is. And we look for this idea of mischaracterizing the rejection. What is Vicor talking about? Vicor says, Syncor mischaracterizes the rejection, which simply proposes incorporating the synchronous rectifiers from Steigerwald 539 into JP446, but does not require incorporating the current waveform. Okay. So the very thing the board is responding to is Vicor says you just take the simple substitution of the component.
And you say that's what's being urged here as well.
That's exactly what's being urged here. Vicor is saying you take the synchronous rectifiers from Steigerwald and you drop them into JP446. That's what they urged in the 702, and what the board said was you can't do that, or at least the simple substitution wouldn't happen, and the reason it wouldn't happen is because there are distinct modes of operation between the two systems, depending on distinct waveform types. Just as in Syncor 5, again, some of these patents are the same. 702 patent, 190 patent, 290 patent, all three of them were at issue there. And we didn't parse the different claims, although the claims were different, because the issue was that the systems were incompatible. If I may, I'd like to turn to the second issue, which has a different kind of a problem with respect to rejections 5 and 6. There, the board proceeded as if the skilled artisan already had Pressman and Steigerwald laying on the table before him. The only question was how best to optimize the combination. The problem is, apart from its inconsistency with WBIP generally, this approach led the board to overlook the fact that Pressman teaches away or points away from what Steigerwald proposes. Specifically, Pressman makes clear that there's a preference for one-stage converters over two-stage converters because two-stage converters handle the power twice and are less efficient as a result.
Is that teaching away to say that a reference prefers one model over another model? That necessarily means that the reference should be taken as teaching away from the other model?
Let me first say that in the Polaris case, this court made clear that it actually doesn't make a difference in terms of review of this kind of situation, which is to say, in Polaris, there was the same issue. Prior art reference said, don't raise the center of gravity in the ATVs by putting the gas tank under the seats, and the board didn't take on that teaching of the prior art. And then the appellant, which is the patent owner, just as in our situation, said on appeal, look, the board needed to reckon with this, teaching.
That's what I'm trying to figure out is, you know, if I was an administrative patent judge in this case, and I read your brief challenging this proposed rejection, would I understand your side as making an argument that you do not make this combination because Pressman teaches away?
Right. So
would I feel like there was a teaching away argument in front of me that I had to address? Obviously, the board decision doesn't make any findings on the question of whether Pressman teaches away, but that, according to the other side, is because your side never made such an argument to the board in the first instance.
So let me take on the question of whether teaching away is the right frame, and then let me talk about what we presented below.
As to the isn't that what you're arguing now? I looked at your
pointing
brief,
away,
it seems to
teaching
be
away, yes.
Teaching away. Pressman teaching away from making this combination. That's how I read your brief.
That's correct, okay. Your Honor.
And now so, I'm trying to find that express language isn't in your brief to the board.
The words teaching away are not. That's correct. Our brief makes the point in this court that, as in Polaris, it's not we're not making an argument that it would have not been obvious based on a teaching away generally, as in it's not sort of like an objective evidence, don't look at this kind of move. It's when you take these two references next to each other, you have to look at what one says about the technique about the other and whether there's a preference stated, as in Polaris, which the court said, even if it's not a teaching away, if there's a preference, that's something the board has to take on. Now let me go to the question of what we presented to the board. And I think the best place to look is, thankfully, same volume, 18047 of volume 3, the joint appendix. And this is where we're making the general point about starting points. And this is the broader WBIP argument in part.
What page?
18047.
Okay.
At the bottom of 18047, we start our argument about you wouldn't make this combination in the first place. And what we say in particular is that DPA, that's a reference to distributed power architecture, which is the single stage approach, was the preferred conventional architecture for large telecommunication and computer systems, which used one or more single stage isolating and regulating as opposed to two stages that separate the two, as shown by Pressman's preference for a single stage converter on each load board. So we're making the point, look, you're plugging these two references out of the prior art. One of them is about radar arrays, pulsed loads. It's a specialized context. It's unusual. The other one, it's a textbook from like 20 years before, and what it teaches is we're past two stages. We're moved on to single stage, which is more efficient, the conventional wisdom as represented by Pressman. That's sort of the conflict that we're pointing at. We made the argument below, and the board didn't confront it. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time. The only thing I wanted to just mention in addition was that we have a couple of other issues in a brief. I'm happy to rest on the brief on the what I will call the Arendi issue, unless the court has questions. But I did want to note that the objective evidence issue cuts across all four rejections. And so there are a lot of permutations in terms of outcomes here, but we have to win on either both of the first two, right, some version, or secondary considerations, some combination thereof. So if there are no further questions, I'd reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Smith, please proceed.
Thank you, Chief Judge Moore. Let me begin where my counterpart left off with the teaching away argument. And I think there's a couple of major distinctions from the Polaris case. First of all, in the Polaris case, the patent owner actually made the argument for teaching away. We were just looking at appendix page 18047, where Syncor allegedly made that argument below. It's a 10-word parenthetical, which doesn't use the term teaching away. It uses the term preference. It's describing something relatively tangential, which is whether a distributed power system is typically one stage or two stage. It is stated without any citation of evidence or any of the calculations or the percentages of efficiency you see in Syncor's opening brief. And it is not the kind of thing that I think could be said to fairly put the board on notice that this issue was at play, so they would have to address it. And I think that's particularly important here, where the appellant is raising Chenery, effectively saying you can't affirm for anything the board didn't address. I think addressing the doctrine of forfeiture, or at least the idea that the board can only give the amount of treatment to an issue that the appellant, you know, deems fit to put into the appeal brief is appropriate here where Chenery is invoked. I would also say that with respect to this particular issue, the board and the examiner below expressly found that Pressman figure 3.4b, and this is in appendix pages 7381 and 7382, was in effect a abstract example of the Steigerwald architecture. That is where you have one stage that leads to multiple output stages. And Pressman expressly teaches that by using the architecture of figure 3.4b, you can create a multiplicity of outputs at high efficiency. So even if one were to take into account this sort of 10-word argument that Syncor made in its brief to the board below that resulted in this particular decision, Pressman is effectively a teaching it toward the specific architecture that's adopted in Steigerwald. And so the efficiency...
Did the board say that, or you're just saying that the evidence, in your view, shows that?
So the board was not specifically refuting the argument that Syncor effectively didn't make in its brief, but the examiner did find that Pressman effectively stated that the examiner did find, based on record evidence, that there was a correspondence between the architecture of Steigerwald 090.
As a procedural matter, do we take a examiner finding not that hasn't been reiterated by the board as a finding that we can rely on?
I don't think it matters in this case because I think it was reiterated by the board, Your Honor. So I think the board did note the examiner's... So the board goes through the examiner's analysis, does note the correspondence with Pressman, and does, I think, refer to figure 3-4-B and the fact that Pressman teaches with respect to figure 3-4-B.
In the descriptive portion.
In the descriptive, but then affirms the examiner. So the board is seeing itself as sitting in judgment over the examiner's rejection. So it does summarize and says the examiner's conclusion here is good based on this. And so I think even the teaching away argument, the board does have a teaching that is supported by substantial evidence in the form of what Pressman actually says about the example in Pressman that is closest to Steigerwald 090 and that it will lead to high efficiency. So that's really a teaching towards, regardless of what ever else this 500-page textbook might say about particular instances of other systems. The Polaris case, I think, is in other respects a very good example of how this issue is treated. I mean, the board found that Steigerwald 090, regardless of what one thinks about the 290 patent or what Dr. Schlecht says about what his motivation was before, you can leave that all aside. Steigerwald 090 is a public domain system where a person of ordinary skill in the art looking at it could see an improvement. And that improvement is the substitution of switching regulators, as we said before. And that improvement was obvious to a person of ordinary skill. So the fact that we have Steigerwald 090 out there and there is an apparent improvement that will lead to a better Steigerwald 090, in effect, is sufficient for the obviousness case. And this is effectively what the Polaris case held when it judged the rejection of Claim 1 over the Denny reference and the Furushima reference, where the patent owner actually raised an argument under WBIP saying, why is it obvious to take this particular reference and modify it to add four-wheel drive? And the court said it's unavailing because that particular principal reference you have is admitted to be analogous art, and it is admitted that there is a motivation to make this change. So you are effectively going to get better prior art in that way, a better prior art system, and that was sufficient to make the obviousness combination. But even if it weren't, I think the examiner and the board found that there was a correspondence between more general systems, such as what we saw in Pressman's figure 3-4-B, that are more broadly applicable to things like telecom. Pressman expressly says that when you have a multiplicity of outputs, the figure 3-4-B embodiment can provide those with high efficiency. And this is what Syncor is arguing in the background of their opening brief at pages 11 to 12, that in the 1990s, leading up to the relevant time frame, there was pressure in the industry to deal with the proliferation of voltages that were needed and pressure to do that with high efficiency. That's exactly what Pressman is saying would occur with this type of architecture. And it's a good reason, even if we're not limited to Steigerwald 090's own purposes, to more broadly take up Steigerwald 090's architecture.
WBIP does say something about how there needed to be some basis for why you would select these references. Was the reason why we said that in WBIP because in that particular case, the primary reference that was being asserted was a land-based generator and the claim was for a marine-based generator, and therefore it would be at least from an initial standpoint, unusual to try to take something like a land-based generator and do all kinds of modifications in order to make it marine-based. And for that reason, that's why we observed that in that particular case, there needed to be some kind of explanation for why you would go off to land-based generators.
Yes, I think that is correct. Noting that there is a sort of mismatch, and we argued this in the brief too, obviously, between the motivation that's being applied and the starting reference. In other words, one might have said, okay, let's pick up a land-based generator and modify it for purposes appropriate to a land-based generator, and that would have been fine in WBIP, I think. That is effectively what is happening here in this case. the board and the examiner took Stargerwald 090, found that adding switching regulators to the non-biased outputs would increase efficiency, and that's better for the purposes of Stargerwald 090. So conceptually speaking, you're not crossing that barrier from a land-based generator to a marine-based generator. Just aside from anything that the 290 patent says, you are getting a better Stargerwald 090 through that modification. But if one wanted to cross that conceptual boundary, there's a lot better evidence in this case that you could do that. In other words, that Stargerwald 090 would be appropriate, more broadly speaking, for the kinds of telecom applications that Dr. Schlecht was talking about in his post-issuance explanation of why the 290 patent was created. Let me briefly address rejection 3 and the issue preclusion question. And in particular, my counterpart's sort of first line and second line arguments, which I understand to be the first line argument being that there was a finding by the prior board that there's a fundamental conflict between these two references and that no one would ever combine them. And the second line argument being this argument about the current waveform. And respectfully, I don't think it's quite as simple as that. If you look at the briefing leading up to the board's prior decision, the reason for that, and I'll address the specific language that he's talking about, which is that there are distinct modes of operation between JP446 and Stargerwald 539, but I think it's important here to do this somewhat chronologically. It shows the reason why there's a little bit of confusion on this record. If you look at Syncor's briefing to the board in the prior case, so this is arguing about JP446 and Stargerwald 539 in the context of the 702 patent, and I'm looking specifically at appendix pages 319, 316, and 317, Syncor does make arguments about the current waveform, the voltage waveform. The problem is they seem to sum this up by saying, and this is on page 19317, quote, as stated above, the claims require short transitions, and JP446 teaches that short transitions would introduce unacceptable noise, thus rendering it unfit for its intended purpose. Now, the claims in the 702 patent are only referring to voltage waveforms. So here, Syncor seems to be saying the problem is you have claims that require short voltage transitions, and JP446 can't handle that. Now, I acknowledge some ambiguity here. They do say, as stated above, which sounds like they're summarizing the argument, but they could be just going back somewhere and sort of arbitrarily picking an argument to reiterate. But when you look at how the board treated this, it does seem to have been taken as a summary that encapsulates all of their arguments, because in the board's opinion, and I'm referring to appendix page 17733, the board reiterates what Syncor's arguments are and finishes with, quote, as a consequence, it is argued that JP446 teaches that short transitions would introduce unacceptable noise, thus rendering it unfit for its intended purpose. So it does seem like the board there is focusing simply on what JP446 needs without considering what Stargerwald 539 needs, which suggests that what the board is saying is, I don't care how this combination takes place. I know the claims require short transitions, and if you try to put those into JP446, that's not going to work. The board then goes on to state its reasoning, and in the board's
I can follow what's going on here. Are you saying that the combination here in replacing one set of rectifiers with another set of rectifiers from Stargerwald, the replacement of the rectifiers doesn't come with it these short transition times? That's a separate piece of the Stargerwald reference. And so they're not attached to each other, such that if you bring one along, the other one, i.e. the short transition times, comes along too.
Yes, I understand what you're saying. So, unfortunately, it's incredibly complicated.
Oh.
And that's because throughout these litigations, Syncor has had a differing and sometimes very broad interpretation of what short transitions means in the claims of their patent, which is not necessarily the same as what JP446 would tolerate in terms of short transitions. But I think what we can say is that the record in the 702 patent, in terms of both Syncor's argument and the decision that was ultimately made, is not very clear. And the reason it's not very clear is because you can't really tell what the board is basing its decision on. Even though the board says there are distinct modes of operations in these two references, that doesn't quite get to where Syncor, I think, wants to get to, which is that you can fundamentally never combine these references. And if you go a couple of sentences later in the opinion, the board says, the distinct waveform needs of JP446 cut directly against the simple substitution argument. I think what the board is saying here is, if you have to substitute in a simple substitution manner, synchronous rectifiers for linear rectifiers, that's going to be very complicated based on these references, and I know you're going to have to get short transitions. But fortunately...
Would I be understanding things right to say that not only do you think that, but the current board thought that about its earlier decision? And if that's right, is that the kind of determination that we defer to? Is that component of an issue preclusion analysis a factual matter or a legal matter?
I think that is a factual matter, Your Honor. And I think under the Administrative Procedure Act, you would need to give that at least substantial evidence type review. The cases that Syncor cited in the gray brief on this issue are dealing with reversals of summary judgment motions that were granted or motions to dismiss on the pleadings that were granted. It's obviously a very different context. In an appeal from an agency governed by the Administrative Procedure Act for the factual matters, of course, you would need to give substantial evidence review, and I think that is a factual issue, although I will profess I don't know an exact citation on whether the relevant question, which is the identity of issues, is a factual sub-issue the way, say, motivation to combine would be in an overall issue that is decided de novo, such as, an obviousness. But in either case, the second board, which had two overlapping members, including the administrative patent judge who wrote the original decision, looked at this and told us why they thought they decided the earlier board decision the way they did. And they said they were influenced by them.
We don't generally give a privileged position to an author of a published opinion as to the meaning for the public of that opinion.
Okay, that's fair. Right.
And I think this board panel has done some inconsistent things over the years across the various inter-parties re-exams. I think we'll all agree.
Okay, Mr. Smith, your time's up. Well, let's have Mr. Horowitz have his rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'm just curious, is this the last Syncor-Vicor?
I wish I could tell you the answer was yes, Judge Chen. There is another pending, so maybe there's eight.
An inter-parties re-exam or something?
Another inter-parties re-exam, a return trip from what we called Syncor 5 in our brief here. All I can say is we weren't the appellant, so we didn't bring it. So, four quick points in rebuttal. On the Pressman-Steigerwald, I just wanted to note that my colleague referred to the board's discussion of figure 3-4B and talked about how it was two-stage. The relevant sites on that are just lost from 76, I think, and 79 of the joint appendix. When you look at that section of the opinion, you'll see that there's no reference to the fact that it's two stages. And we did present evidence below at 1121 and 1147 to 49. This is cited in our briefs, explaining why Pressman doesn't... that teaches away or points away from that two-stage architecture. On WBIP, the issue is that there needs to be some explanation of the motivation for picking up these two references out of the sea of prior art. That's the issue on that case in particular. There isn't an explanation. It starts from, you've got Steigerwald, you've got Pressman, how would you improve one with the other? That's WBIP teaches that that's not how the analysis goes. With respect to preclusion, there's two points I wanted to make. One has to do with what's going on in the board's decision. I grant you, we did make both arguments. We did say that you wouldn't import the short transitions, you wouldn't import the synchronous rectifiers. And the board summarized our arguments, including the short transitions one. That's true. But when you look at what the board decided, the board's decisional language and the board's reasoning, that's on 17.734. What the board said is, we, the board, do not think patent owner has mischaracterized the rejection. What are they saying? We disagree with what Vicor said on page 20 of its brief. That's the thing I took you to before about the synchronous rectifiers. The board is explicitly rejecting the very argument that Vicor was making about synchronous rectifiers. And then at the end, simple substitution. We don't think you could do this simple substitution. Counsel just acknowledged that the substitution they're talking about is rectifiers, not waveforms. The word simple substitution, that argument, it's imported from a Murata re-exam. We explained this in our brief. There is no simple substitution argument with respect to the voltage waveform short transitions anywhere in the record. So they must be talking about the issue that is in common between this case and that one. And the last point I just wanted to note on the standard of review. Vicor cites one case, the Gossage case, to support its idea that the standard of review includes deference in preclusion analysis. Vicor does not cite a single case where this court or any other deferred to the same issue determination, which is the question, Judge Toronto, that you were asking about. Do we defer on the same issue determination? Vicor didn't cite a single case where that's happened. The issue is handled de novo routinely. In fact, in Syncor 5, we raised it for the first time on appeal. The court just answered the question because it's a legal question based on the legal materials in the record. It's not the sort of thing courts generally defer to. The only deference in Gossage had to do with a matter of historical fact. Did this person have records in his possession?
Okay, Mr. Horowitz, your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
This case under submission.